Hi, first I want to thank Natalie for her introduction. We've actually worked with some of the same collaborators. The heat vulnerability index that I put together while I was a fellow at EPA was done with Marie O'Neill and Karina Granlund and some of the other people that Natalie has worked with. So I think this follows up nicely on her talk. And I'm going to be talking about our attempt to validate the heat vulnerability index with some health data. And first, I have no relationships to disclose. So just to give you some background on what the heat vulnerability index is that we put together previously, we wanted to look at submetropolitan area variability in vulnerability to heat. And so we surveyed the epidemiological literature for variables that denoted increased vulnerability consistently in studies done in different locations. And from those variables, we then looked to see which of those were available nationally in order to put together this heat vulnerability index at the neighborhood level across the lower 48 or the continental 48 states. And so we were limited to 10 variables that we could get nationally. And they were very correlated, so we did a principal components analysis to create four statistically independent factors. And I list them here. And based on which variables loaded more heavily on each factor, we came up with these themes. So, for example, factor one, which had high loadings for the percent of the population living in poverty, the percent of the population below with less than a high school education, percent of the population non-white, and percent of the census tract. We were doing this all at the census tract level that did not have green space, which we thought of that as the socioeconomic and environmental vulnerability. Factor two had high loadings for living alone. Factor three was about air conditioning prevalence. And factor four, we thought of as pre-existing health conditions. There's many pre-existing health conditions that make one more vulnerable to morbidity or mortality related to heat. However, we only had data nationally on that for diabetes prevalence from the BRFSS database. And then population over 65 happened to load in the same factor as diabetes prevalence. And we think that part of the reason that the population over 65 is more vulnerable than other age groups is because they tend to have other health concerns as well. And then we summed up these four factors to get a cumulative heat vulnerability index for each census tract, which we then mapped for the contiguous 48 states. You can see that it doesn't cover everywhere. We were limited by where we had air conditioning prevalence data. This came from the American Housing Survey, which is only done for certain metropolitan areas. We could have removed air conditioning from our model and been able to map every census tract in the US. However, air conditioning is a very important adaptation measure for heat, as much as it has some drawbacks in terms of its own contribution to climate change and emitting greenhouse gases and exhaust heat to the neighboring environment. But we decided that air conditioning was really important for adaptation, and so we left it in. You can see there's different places that have higher vulnerability: the Pacific Coast, the Northeast, and the Upper Midwest. However, even within the Southeast, which in general was less vulnerable, you can see an area. Let's see if this is working. In the Mississippi Delta area, that's more vulnerable. And you can also see that Minneapolis, despite being in the Upper Midwest, is less vulnerable than some of the other Upper Midwest areas. You can also see that within any metropolitan area, if you zoom in, there's different vulnerability in different parts of a city. So even in the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area, it's overall less vulnerable than many other metropolitan areas in the country, but it has this downtown area that's more vulnerable. And often there's various vulnerability factors in the downtown area. So that's just to give you an idea of what we did previously. And the article was published in Environmental Health Perspectives in 2009, if you want to find out more about what we did for the heat vulnerability index. When I arrived at UC Berkeley a year ago, I was involved with the Berkeley's Environmental Public Health Tracking Network, which is one of four academic partners in excellence within the tracking network. And each APEX, as it's called, was asked to do a linkage project with states in the tracking network using tracking data. And Berkeley was asked to do one related to climate change. And the PI for the project, who's one of my advisors, thought it would be a great way to follow up on the work that I had done previously to attempt to validate it with data, health data available in the tracking network. The states got to choose which project they worked on, and these are the five states that have been working on this project with us. Before I get into the actual study we've done, I just want to make a point that this was a unique way of doing a collaborative study where the states had the health data in-house, and for confidentiality reasons, were not able to share that with us. So together, we would plan with the states the methodology. We would write up the statistical analyses, send the code to the states, they would run the analysis, send the results back, and then we would all, on the next call, talk through the results and keep going back and forth this way. And we actually found it to be a great collaborative process and an ideal way to work with the tracking network on research projects. So, as I said, the states collected their health data. They collected hospitalization and mortality counts for each day for the period from 2000 to 2007 during the warm season. We restricted to May through September because we didn't want to look at the effects of cold. We were more focused on the effects of heat. And all of their health data is available at the zip code. If you remember, the HVI had been originally put together at the census tract level. And so in order to work with the health data, we had to take an area-weighted mean of the HVI of all the census tracts within a zip code to get an HVI value for the zip code level to do this analysis. And then for our heat exposure, we came up with a measure that we think gets at an important concept in the effects of heat physiologically. We know that sometimes, in some instances at least, there's evidence to show that earlier, heat waves earlier in the season can have more of a health effect than later in the season because humans physiologically and behaviorally adapt to heat not only when they move to a new climate but also throughout the season. And so we wanted to get at a measure that we could apply consistently across the various climate regions in our study and that would get at how different is the given day from what you're used to for that time of year. So deviance we calculated as the daily maximum temperature minus the 30-year normal maximum temperature for that calendar day for that weather station. And then we assigned the weather stations to zip codes, and I won't go into the methods we did for that. And then we dichotomized it to look at the most deviant days. We weren't interested in everyday deviance. We wanted some extreme deviance in our study. So we looked at the top 5% of days as deviant and compared it to the days that were not as deviant, not as hot. So we looked at lots of health outcomes. This is the list of all that we looked at. They come from previous studies of mortality and morbidity related to heat. And the ones in italics are the ones I'm going to focus on today. There's so much data in this study, I can't present it all. And the ones in italics are most closely related physiologically to heat and that are less likely to be associated with access to care. So our main question was, to what extent do areas that are more vulnerable experience higher rates of mortality and morbidity during an extreme heat day? And so our outcome were counts by zip code day. Our exposure was that deviant day binary variable. Our effect modifier was the heat vulnerability index, which was a continuous variable. And then we controlled for day of week and ozone. And so our first conclusion is that the heat vulnerability index does show us increased risk of morbidity and mortality. This data is from Washington, just as an example, and it shows the hospitalization outcomes. And you can see for most of the outcomes that we looked at, there is statistically significant increased risk, and even for internal causes in all hospitalizations, which is not as refined an outcome because it includes so many, we still see this increased risk with the vulnerability index. Heat-related illness, you would think, is very closely related to heat, but it's very rarely diagnosed. Many people, when you look at the heat epidemiological literature, there's many other outcomes that are very closely associated with heat. And so we actually didn't have much power. There were very few cases of heat-related illness. So as much as this is showing a slight protective effect, it's really, we can't say much about heat given the large confidence interval. So in general, the HVI shows increased risk. When we look at deviant day alone, the first one, or these ones over here, are when we put HVI, or the deviant day alone in the model, and we don't put in the heat vulnerability index. And for that, we're seeing an increased risk of morbidity and mortality. These are just a few selected outcomes on the deviant day compared to a non-deviant day. And this is a new measure of heat. We haven't seen this in other studies of heat, so it was important for us to see that alone the deviant day is showing an effect. However, when you put the HVI in the model, that effect goes away. And all of these are not statistically significant, but even show somewhat of a protective effect. And this is, we take away from this that the heat vulnerability index is a better predictor of risk for risk for morbidity and mortality than is deviant day alone. And then when we look at this interaction of the two, the heat vulnerability index and the deviant day, so if you live in a more vulnerable zip code and it's an extremely hot day, you do see consistently for all of our states increased risk for, I only put four of the outcomes here, but we actually see it for almost all of our outcomes across almost all of our states. Even in New Mexico, where we had much less data and much less power to see an effect, we were still seeing this increased risk for the combined effect. And then we also wanted to see, in different parts of the country, do we have different patterns of vulnerability? Do we need the full heat vulnerability index in all locations, or are certain factors more important? So we then ran the regressions looking at each factor individually, and we had 15 health outcomes. And so to simplify, I just put a check in the box where there's the majority of the health outcomes showed an increased risk for that factor. And so you can see that across the five states that were in our study, we did see different patterns where certain factors were more important in certain states than in others. For example, in New Mexico, none of our 15 outcomes were significantly elevated risk for factors 1, 2, or 3. It was just the population over 65 and population with diabetes that showed an effect there. Yet all of the states showed that the cumulative heat vulnerability index was important. So we think that this gets at the need to think more locally about the different vulnerability factors that are important in a given location. We've also started to look at the sub-state level, and we've looked at metropolitan statistical areas, and we're seeing even different patterns within our states when you look at Boston compared to Springfield or Fresno compared to Los Angeles. And so we're still trying to tease out the different effects there, but we are seeing that local information does matter. We also looked at coastal areas. And this is just an example from California. We are seeing that there is some difference in vulnerability, or the way the heat vulnerability index plays a role in denoting denoting increased risk in these places. And even though the confidence intervals are crossing, so they're not completely separate, they're not completely different between coastal and non-coastal areas, you do see in California that the coastal areas are showing a slightly higher risk than non-coastal areas for electrolyte imbalance, nephritis, and renal failure when you increase the heat vulnerability index by 1 unit. So just to conclude, there's a lot to say about this, and if anyone wants to talk further about what we're doing, I could go on and on. We are seeing that the HVI is doing a good job of denoting higher risk for heat-related illnesses, but there's different components that might be more important in certain places than others. And deviant day is a new measure, which it does show increased vulnerability alone, but HVI seems to be a more important predictor of risk than deviant day. And just another point that our collaborative process has been really, thank you, it's been a great experience. So just to say some of the things that we're planning on doing next, We're going to divide the heat vulnerability index into three categories to see if we see a dose response effect. So far, we've been looking at it continuously. So all of the results you were seeing was for a 1-unit increase in the heat vulnerability index. We also want to look at deviation as a continuous variable to see, instead of just looking at the top 5% of days, do we see an effect as deviance from normal increases? And we also are hoping to get funding to look at more states, because clearly the states in our study do not represent all of the climates and vulnerabilities in the US. And we want to compare our deviance measure to some of the more traditional heat exposure metrics that have been used in previous studies. And then finally, I just want to thank all of the many collaborators on this project. We were working with many states, the CDC, and various researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, and without all of the people on this list, this project would not have been so successful and so interesting. So thank you.